we're back for another episode, and we're finally talking about Chitabi, a hot new topic, a hot new area. We have been to the adjacent Karokwe, which is right next door to Chitabi. Well, right next door. In Delta terms, it's next door, which means it's like 50 miles away. But Chitabi's reputation...
Yeah, give a little context on the concession as well.
Chitabi's reputation precedes it. I mean, it's it is a part of the Okavango Delta that is well known for its incredible sightings. And I know that might sound like I always say that about everywhere in the Delta, but Chitabi is just...
Particularly
it's,
so.
It's on the map, right? It's sort of... You have like Mambo, and then you have Chitabi.
Yeah.
And then I think maybe like Duba or something. But I think that Chitabi is really right up there with the place that's well known for having some of the better sightings in the Okavango.
Yeah. I think also just the density of predators and the frequency with which you see them and have very good sightings of them.
Yeah,
is
right.
What I associate with Chitabi.
So we left Tubu Tree and we went to Chitabi. We're still in the Delta, by the way. We are currently at Vumbura Plains, but...
That'll come in a few episodes.
Yeah, we'll talk about that at another point. But anyway, let's go back to Chitabi. We landed. It was hot, unseasonably hot. That's not something that we've really mentioned in the past few episodes, but it's been like 32, 33, 34 degrees most days, which for the end of May...
It's like mid to upper 80s every day.
Exactly, yeah. Almost up to, I think, up to 90 one or two of the days. It's unseasonably hot.
And we have game viewing has been exceptional.
Oh, yeah. I think good weather makes for good game viewing.
Yeah.
Not that windy. A little bit of wind the last day or two, but not bad.
But, like, we saw clouds for the first time.
Yesterday
on day, like, 8 of this trip.
Yeah.
But it's been perfect because it's not roasting hot. It's just sunny and a lovely temperature. I mean, it's like hot during the middle of the day if you're in the sun, but you're not normally. So game drive temperature has been fantastic. And I think the animals are also really vibing with this weather too.
It's also easy to say when you're sitting in the shade of a massive jackalberry with your feet plopped in the pool. No, but let's go back to Chitabi. Yeah. So we landed at the airstrip. It was really nice and hot. It was a nice and quick flight to get to Chitabi. And our guide met us there at the airstrip. Tank is his name. And he said immediately, you know, what have you guys seen so far? And we said, we've seen lots of stuff at Tubu, like we mentioned in the previous episodes. But we haven't seen cheetah yet, and Chitabi is not named after cheetah, Chitabi. It's actually, the word means plains where zebras roam, as we found out. Their logo is a wild dog, but the word Chitabi means plains where zebra
open
roam.
Plains.
Open plains, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's very well known for cheetah sightings, and Tank immediately said, oh, well, you know, there's actually a cheetah close by. Would you like to go see it? And now it was hot, so we were thinking maybe it's not the best idea to do now, but he said she's right here.
And the airstrip is a decent enough drive from the lodge that, like, while we're here,
yeah,
kind of might as well.
Yeah right, exactly. So
otherwise we're gonna get to the lodge, settle in, and come straight back.
Yeah, exactly. So we decided to go, and it did not disappoint, and here's why. Because it wasn't just a cheetah, it was a cheetah with six cubs, which, you know, cheetahs compared to the other cats that are out here, they generally give birth to bigger litters. Like a leopard might have 1, 2, very rarely 3, and you would expect a lion average is probably 3 or 4 cubs, sometimes 5. But cheetah can give birth to bigger litters, and 6 is also a big litter for a cheetah. I've seen one cheetah with 7 cubs before. When I was in the Kruger one time, but 6 cubs,
often
that
they do not survive.
Exactly.
And that's why they have larger litters, because their success rate for the cubs is not high.
Yeah, they're bottom of the pecking order when it comes to the large cats. And the youngsters often get predated on by other cats, like lions. Lions kill them. Things like baboons as well, and hyena.
Injuries, leopard, yeah.
Yeah, all sorts. So we arrived at the scene, and there was this mother, and she had six cubs, and it was the heat of the day, and we really weren't expecting much to happen. It was just lovely to see all of these cats so close together. It's like a herd of cats almost. Yeah. Feels really bizarre to see that. And for our guests, their first cheetahs in the wild ever, you know, they were super stoked. But as luck would have it, the cheetahs became active, and they became active because they had earlier that day made a kill. What kill was that again?
Impala.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in quite a dry area.
Right,
so,
by the airstrip. It's a great hunting area.
Yeah.
It's like very open. There's some sage bushes around, but besides that, there's not that much vegetation.
There's some acacia, like a bit of acacia woodland as well.
And then the airstrip, which is this like wide open area that antelope go on, and so it's great for the female to hunt there.
Yeah, so talking to Tank, it sounded very much like the cheetah mother had been using this airstrip to hunt on almost a daily basis, and she'd been in this area for a couple of weeks, or in the sort of immediate vicinity of the airstrip, so she'd been easy enough to find. Oh, that's a hoopoe there. Anyway,
yes.
Again, in the heat of the day, didn't expect them to even do anything with this impala kill, but we went over to where the kill was, and there was one of the cubs there, and it started to feed. And within a minute or two, two or three cubs started to feed. And then after a while, all of the cubs were sort of
they all came, and then it was either the last one that was coming through
that's
the grass,
right. Yeah,
or
yeah,
the
yeah,
mother
yeah.
was coming through the grass. No, sorry. The mother was at the kill. One of the last cubs started coming towards the kill. And the mother obviously thought it was a
something else.
Foe of some variety, hyena or something, and made a like alarm call to the cubs.
Yeah.
And every cheetah went in a different direction.
Yeah.
And they all scattered and went at full speed. Well, not full speed, but very quickly moved away from the carcass in different directions.
And it's sort of in the blink of an eye. It's like these animals are very relaxed, very into their feeding, very kind of at ease. And
then they weren't.
The second that they picked up that there might be a hint of danger, they fled in all directions, like Hadley said.
So then we kind of watched them take their like leaps and bounds away, and then assess, look around. The mother realizes it's just one of the cubs. They all kind of slowly relax, and then we watch as they like meander around the area. Three of them climb up onto a termite mound together, and they kind of get a bit of height, and they're looking around, and then they start making their way back to the kill. And I think before we had gotten there, they had fed and they were all resting in the shade. As Tommy said, it's getting quite hot by then, but then once they were scattered and came back, it was kind of like they all woke up and were like, oh well, while we're up, might as well have some lunch.
Yeah, there's like 1 cubic inch of space in the stomach. Let's fill it with meat. That's how cats go for it. They just gorge themselves always.
Did we say how old the cubs were? Do you remember how old they were?
They were about 9 months, I'd say.
Yeah,
maybe anywhere between 3/4 of a year and a year old, I think.
Which is really, like, that I think was what was so special is when Tank mentioned that there were six cubs, I was thinking, all right, well, they're going to be pretty small. Little still. That's why there's six of them. So to then see them, you know, 6 months plus was really cool, because it's such a testament to how well that female is doing at hunting and keeping them alive in an area that is known for its predator density.
Yeah, for its lion density especially. And on top of that, we were also told that she had previously had a litter of six that she'd raised to independence, to adulthood. So that's remarkable as well in its own right. This is her second litter of six. So she's A, very fertile, and B, she's just an exceptional mother, which we definitely saw by how quickly she alerted her cubs when there was something that resembled danger.
It was interesting. Tank was, we were kind of talking about what a successful parent she is, and he said, yeah, it's kind of a problem how good of a mother she is, because when she last, with her last litter of six, when she finally like pushed them off and made them go and be independent of her, I think she said within like a week, he said within a week or two, at least one or two of the cubs then were killed. And he says she's so on such high alert, and at any sign of danger, she warns the cubs, and so they are so reliant on her being so sharp.
I was debating whether or not to talk about that, but I think you guys are ready for it. Yeah, that is Mother Nature, unfortunately.
Some of the old ones died.
Yeah. I was just anyway, we decided then after we watched them feeding for a while to leave them. One of the other reasons why we left them was because we forgot our cameras, because our cameras so were brutal. From the airstrip. We had put our, both Hadley and I had put our cameras onto the luggage vehicle because we thought, okay, we're just going to drive through to the lodge. Big mistake.
No, don't ever
do that. Rookie.
No. I did not purposely do that. My bag was packed and we got onto the vehicle and I was going to, when we got onto our game viewer, if the luggage wasn't coming with us, I was going to grab my camera bag. Once we're onto the vehicle, Tank starts telling us about this and I was like, wait a second, where's my camera bag? And I'm like looking around.
Gone.
And I can see the luggage vehicle driving off. And I was like, oh my God. Video camera, GoPro, camera, everything is in that. All we had was our phone. And I mean, I was able to get, you know, fine stuff for the phone, but it's not.
I like that the GoPro is now making your list of equipment that's necessary.
One of them. It's not. That is not the list. That's just the list of gear that was driving away from us.
I have this GoPro on this, it's like a selfie stick, but the selfie stick extends to like
45 feet.
No, long. Like nine feet or so. And it's to get sort of different angles and different shots. And, you know, it's, I think, been a point of contention because it looks totally ridiculous when it's fully extended and I'm like taking a video of us or of whatever. But Hadley's also recently seen some of the footage.
It's very nice.
That I've gotten and she's happy with it. So now the GoPro makes the list. It makes the cut.
Yeah. But all of this to say that we stupidly did not have any of our camera gear with us.
So there will not be that many photos and videos accompanying this segment of the podcast. So let's move on to the next bit. Oh no, sorry. We should continue the story about the cheetah because the following afternoon, we didn't manage to see the cheetah in the... No, we did. The following morning, we went out again and there's a whole other story for the afternoon drive because we didn't quite make it to the cheetah in the afternoon. But the next morning we went out and we found, close to the airstrip, we found the family of cheetah and they were kind of getting active. And we had this lovely...
That was the next day?
That was the next morning, yeah. Yeah, like mid-morning the next morning.
Wow.
Yeah. This, so we kind of, the cheetah had left their kill, something that cheetah typically do. So they kind of, they prefer feeding on fresh meat, A, and B, they also, generally speaking, avoid their kill attracting attention. So, you know, when they've all had a good feed during the day, in the evening when other predators start to get active, they often leave the area. So as not to put themselves into any danger.
They're just like really bottom of the picking.
Yeah,
they just cannot catch a break.
No, and that's one of the problems at the moment. You know, one of the threats that that cheetah face is the fact that their habitats have fragmented so much that they are now being forced into these last protected wilderness areas where they are in areas with high densities of other predators. So obviously it's amazing that there's high densities of these predators in areas like Chitabi, but
the
fact is that the cheetah have been pushed into these areas because other areas are no longer available. So they're forced to coexist with these predators, and that's why their numbers are dropping. At least that's kind of the general interpretation of it from my side. That next morning that we found, and they were still pretty full from the previous day. It was a male impala. That goes a long way for a family of cheetah. You know, they don't need to feed as much as lions do or as leopards.
Yeah, and they're still little.
Yeah, and they were still young.
But the six are not that big.
Yeah, exactly. But we still were able to watch them as they were sort of doing a bit of mid-morning activity. And that was the youngsters were kind of moving around and the mother thought about hunting something, and there was this really cool standoff of where the mother was focused on an impala that was in the distance, and she then dropped down kind of behind a bush, and then at the same time there was another impala closer to her that she wasn't necessarily focused on but she was aware of, and that impala thought that it might have sensed some danger in the area. It was probably because one of the cubs was moving around.
Yeah, and the sun was directly behind the cheetah. So the sun is going straight into the impala's eyes. So it can't see them.
Yeah, good point.
But it could have maybe seen movement or smelled something. I think that, I can't remember if he was upwind or not, but definitely being blinded by the sun, and it wasn't alarming, but it was just staring straight at three of the cubs.
Yeah, so that was really cool because it was this standoff of about 10-15 minutes mm-hmm. between this cheetah mother and then those impala. The impala that she was focused on moved off, and so did the one that was in the bush, and then she settled down again, and it was starting to get hot again. But we had some really good views of all six cubs and this cheetah mother kind of walking and just interacting, and phenomenal sighting.
Yeah.
The cheetah of Chitabi didn't disappoint, because just to finish the segment on cheetah, we, on the last day, managed to find a male who had just killed an impala. That seems like the impala are on the receiving end of the when it comes to the cheetahs hunting or the cheetahs menu. We had a really good view of this male sitting on in the shade of this termite mound with this impala that he'd fed on once that morning. So really, really good cheetah sightings. To see eight cheetah anywhere, and we saw seven, which is the family and then the one, but to see eight cheetah anywhere is just really remarkable.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was really cool to see the female and those cubs, particularly to see them that age. I just really wasn't...
Mm.
It's so impressive that she's raising them so successfully. And then to see the male just makes you feel like the population is really doing well there.
Yeah.
And, like, considering the fact that, like, they'll get pushed off a kill by hyena, by leopard, by lions, by vultures, if there's enough of them. Like, they really... And risk management at all costs, and you know, they're very good at hunting, so defending a kill is just not worth the risk of them getting injured and not being able to hunt. But it's such a pity of, like, you think the energy wasted on these hunts and then getting pushed off.
Did I tell you that on the last morning as well, I was sitting in the front next to our guide, and I'm always listening to the chatter on the radio, but I don't understand all of it. But I was asking Tank, and he said, no, there were two different groups of three cheetah that were not any of those cheetah that we'd seen by the guides. And we just happened to be in a very different part of the reserve, or the concession, so we didn't go and follow up on them. But so they see cheetah very consistently. So, yep, Chitabi, go there if you want to see cheetah. Let's continue.
Well, okay, also, let's put that into context. Like, still need to be lucky, still very difficult predator to see.
Go to Chitabi if you want to see cheetah. That's my recommendation. I've just been there, trust me. The next, let's segue into the next sort of part of the podcast that we wanted to get to, because do we want to talk about the dogs or the first game drive?
Well, we just talked about the first game drive.
The first afternoon with the...
Give me a hint.
The leopard in the tree.
Oh.
Let's talk about that.
Or what?
No, let's talk about that.
Okay.
So...
Well, this one's a juicy one.
This is a good one, yeah. Mm-hmm. This is spicy.
Very spicy.
The first afternoon, we wanted to see a bit more of the area close to the camp.
Wait, also, can we just, for a second, for context, the Chitabi concession, do you remember what it is in acres?
It's 70,000 something and 28,000 the other. So the
70,000, so I think it's 77,000 acres. Let me check really quick and just make sure.
It's big. It doesn't, I mean...
Well, we just can speak to, like, how many... lodges.
So you have Chitabi and Chitabi Ladiba.
70,000 acres.
70,000 acres. And you have Chitabi and Chitabi...
North and east.
Hang on. You have Chitabi and Chitabi Ladiba, which I think can have three vehicles each, because there are... Yeah, call it that. So you have six vehicles from there. And then you have Sandibe, which is to the north. They're able to traverse on each other's concessions. So you might have a total of like 10 vehicles.
On 70,000 acres.
In this area, yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, all of these sightings, again, we were able to stay in them as long as we wanted. So the next sighting, that afternoon, we wanted to drive around a bit of the lodge area, because our guide had said, no, this is a great area just to check out. And there are various leopards and lions around. And we thought, you know what, we're not going to drive. We thought if we get to the airstrip, that's great. But realistically, it's quite far away, and we don't need to drive that far.
Yeah, and like the afternoon game drive is a little bit shorter. You've got less daylight. It's not like the morning where you have like 5 hours to get somewhere and then spend time there. Like the afternoon, if we were going to go back to the airstrip, like, that's a significant portion of the afternoon drive getting there and back. So
yeah, totally.
So let's stay around the lodge. There's some water just in front of the lodge. So I said, okay, maybe Seth will come down to drink. Lion and leopard kind of resident around the lodge. So
yeah,
let's look for that. Sure. Out we go.
So we went out. We went looking specifically for a female with a very young cub that had been seen, I think, that morning. We did not find them. We were kind of looking around the island that she had been seen on, or that they had been seen on. Couldn't find them. We drove like 5 minutes further, and Tank was like, okay, there's been another leopard seen on this island, which is like 5 minutes away from where we had been looking for the other leopard. And he was like, do you guys want to go check it out? And we were like, yeah, absolutely. And we get there, and at the base of a lovely tree, maybe a sausage tree or a jackalberry, is this young male leopard of around 2 years, maybe 2.5 years of age. He looked a lot smaller, but he's also independent, so that would make sense.
And I'm sure they know exactly when he was born, so yeah. I'm sure they're right in that he's two, but so small.
Not a very large male leopard, but we observed him on the ground. He then made some contact calls, and we were told his sister was in the same area, so she had been seen in that area earlier. He made some contact calls, which I thought meant that he wanted to link up with his sister. But then what he did was he climbed into the tree.
I think it's a leadwood.
Oh, a leadwood. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That sounds familiar. Or that, yeah.
Looks like a leadwood.
It climbed into the tree and then started feeding on an impala carcass that was up there, because I don't know which one of these two had killed it and put it in the tree, but they had made a kill and there was a lot of meat on it. It was a male impala. So again, for a leopard, especially a young leopard, to carry a male impala into a tree, that must have been really impressive to see.
Yeah.
But for us to see this young male climb into the tree was phenomenal. And then this, I think about half an hour scene began and unfolded where we watched this young male feeding in a very kind of typical leopard manner. But there was this constant fear.
Typical leopard youngster manner also, yeah. I would say. There was definitely an element of like clumsiness and like trying to maneuver this impala. It had positioned it very well, yeah, with the head in the crook of a V. So that was like anchoring the whole kill, but then he kept moving it to access different parts to feed on, and this series of like, oh, is he gonna fall?
And not to get too like graphic with this, but basically the impala had been decapitated and its head was dangling just by a little piece of fur. And it constantly looked like when this leopard was feeding and shifting the weight of the impala that the head would drop. So there was a lot of suspense around that. On top of that, you could hear you could hear this male like crunching on the bones and kind of
sinew,
removing the meat from the bones.
Feeding on the ribs for a while.
Yeah, exactly. It brought out quite a strange side of us. I mean, our commentary on the whole situation.
And our guests. It was very funny.
We're loving it, but at the same time also a little bit like, It was morose. Quite gruesome, yeah, and intense. Anyway, after the leopard had finished feeding, and that's pretty normal for a leopard to feed for about half an hour and then be full, especially when they're full already to begin with.
Yeah.
He came down out of the tree. And that was really nice to see, because I thought he was really good at positioning that impala in the tree, and he showed really good skill. But climbing into and climbing out of the tree, he didn't look, maybe it was because he was so heavy with food, but he just didn't look super well balanced, or his technique for getting out of the tree wasn't as good as other leopards that I've seen. But anyway, it was still really, really cool to watch. We then decided, okay, let's go maybe for a sundowner. The sun had pretty much already set.
I'm now thinking, I was just kind of thinking about what you were saying there. One thing that our guide did say, which is interesting now to kind of consider, is that the guide mentioned that his mother, the female that's like resident around the camp, she doesn't like climbing trees. And it's very uncommon that she puts her kills in trees. She just feeds on her kills quite quickly and moves off, and she doesn't like treeing them. And he was saying it's actually impressive that this male was capable of treeing a male impala, because he hasn't learned it from the mother. that's something just instinctually that he knows to do, given, you know, the other presence of predators in the area. So maybe he's just not been taught how to gracefully ascend and descend from trees, but
yeah,
he did manage to get the kill up there, because I don't think that his sister could have done that.
True. I don't think so either.
Anyways, continue. So yeah, he comes down the tree.
We decide to leave that sighting because now the leopard is inactive.
It's, oh, we're like, let's get a, we'll have a cocktail. Yeah. Go do a sundowner, head to this open floodplain. Maybe we get a nice sunset.
Celebrate. We drove out of the island, onto the kind of far side of it. And we're kind of skirting a lot of the tracks that you drive on are on the outside of islands and then also on the edge of the floodplain. So sort of on the boundary of island and floodplain. Mm-hmm. Which is really nice because it allows you to kind of peek into the trees and into the islands a bit, and on the one side, and then on the other side, look into the big, vast, open floodplain. On this open floodplain,
there are
some giraffe, yeah, which to me is like my, it's the worst. And I haven't told these guests yet that I hate giraffe. Maybe they're going to listen to this at some point, but anyway, I'm afraid to break to these guests at any point on this trip that I hate giraffe. And so we spent some time.
I'm sure we've talked about this on the podcast before.
We have. We're looking at these giraffe, and the giraffe are intently staring in one direction, and we're looking with binos, and then we look in the direction that they're looking at, and there's a lioness.
Moving pretty quickly.
Moving with intent, yep. Far away. I mean, we're talking like easily, I would say much further, to be honest. I would say close to half a kilometer away. Like, we were looking with binos and these things were small. Anyway, this lioness is walking with intent. Looks pretty young from a distance to me. So we're like, okay, we're scrapping the sundowner. Let's just see what these lions are up to.
This lion.
Oh, and this then lion, yeah.
We're
yeah.
like, oh, wait a second. There's another one. Also moving quite quickly with intent. Yeah. And then, oh, what do you know? Two more. And the two at the back, I thought it was four.
Yeah, four.
The two at the back are quite a distance ahead behind the two kind of closer to the front, and so they start kind of running across this floodplain, or trotting across this floodplain to catch up with them. And
yeah.
Two giraffe are just watching the whole thing unfold.
So we're like, where, you know, what are they up to here? They've definitely caught a scent of something, or they've heard something.
Or they're like trying to, they've heard the pride, and they're trying to catch up with the rest of the pride, something. Yeah.
They also look young, so that's, you know, younger lions probably would feel a little bit uneasy crossing a big open floodplain by themselves without the older members, the senior members of the pride being around. But
it's clear they've picked up something.
They've
and they're
picked
now
up something.
Almost all four of them at all times are now trotting, either quickly walking or trotting across this. I mean, it was probably a kilometer across that entire floodplain.
Yeah, it was far. We then see that they disappear into this island, and now we've driven around the island that we were on previously, so I was a little bit turned around. I didn't quite realize that this was the same island that we'd seen the leopard on. We follow these lions into the siding, and just as we get to where we'd previously seen the leopard, remember that the leopard was on the ground now, the lions run in, and the leopard scarpers. It's pretty much dark now, so we've got a spotlight on, which we don't use at this stage because we're not trying to interfere or influence either of these predators and their behavior, their natural behavior. So it's only sort of when we know that the lions are now underneath this tree and there's no leopard in sight, because we can just still see because it's still just about bright enough to see.
Yeah, the moon was.
Yeah, and do we put on the spotlight? And we see that these four lionesses are underneath the tree that the impala carcass is in.
Sniffing all around where we have just seen a bunch of little tidbits of rib drop.
Yeah, exactly. So that young male, when he'd been feeding on the impala, he'd definitely dropped a few pieces of it. And these lions picked up one or two of these pieces that were there. And like, it's not much. It's like morselfuls of food, right?
Sorry, there's a bird I want to take a picture of.
And I'll keep talking.
Okay.
And the lionesses were just sniffing, feeding on these little morsels, and then the one was looking up into the tree, looking around. Like, the others seemed disinterested after a while. They were like, it was almost like they understood what had happened here. I'm sure this is something that happens regularly enough. There's a white bread robin chat in there as well.
What's that?
It's a white bread robin
chat. No, up here.
Oh.
Oh, there it is.
Anyway, so the lions come across this sort of scene regularly, I'm pretty sure, you know, they smell a leopard kill and they go and investigate, and I think that they are aware of their ability to climb trees, and they're also aware of their ability not to climb trees. And this was
And this is the bottom, like, 8 feet of this tree is just straight up. There's no like branch forking out. It's just like eight to 10 feet of straight up.
This was not a tree that they could climb.
There's a little bird party coming.
So they decided not to. One of the lions, with kind of a half tail, affectionately known to the guides as Scotty, was looking up at the carcass and was kind of weighing up, can it get up into the tree or not? It decided after a while it can't, and the lions disappeared. They walked out of the island again, onto bigger and better things. What we then did was we looked around to where we thought the leopard had gone. And we were able to use our spotlights now because it wouldn't interfere or affect anything. And we found this poor male leopard really high in this jackalberry tree, like looking around, like frantically panting, and just, you know, it was full of food, obviously. It had to climb high up into this tree to escape these lions.
That probably came running at it.
They came running in. They came running into that siding. And it was just, you could see that it was stressed out. So in that situation, you know, we viewed that leopard quickly, and then we also left because you don't want, you want that leopard to come to its own decision.
Yeah, and if he wants to come down and leave, you don't want to be a reason that he's not doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And that was that afternoon's game drive. After that, we drove back to the lodge. We found, I think, we had a really nice little sighting of an African wildcat.
I forgot about that.
And that was our first sort of
welcome
half
to Chitabi.
Of a day, welcome to Chitabi. And blown away.
Yeah.
Totally blown away. Like, it's, you know, the Sabi Sands in South Africa is a place that's known for predator interactions and predator sightings. Both of the sightings we'd had, again, were really long. We didn't have to leave the siding because there's other vehicles pushing us out. And I know we keep mentioning this, but this is the really special thing.
Right. That's what makes this area so special and so distinct and so different from most other safari destinations.
That was only the first afternoon at Chitabi. I think we will carry on in another episode about some of the other stuff that we've seen while at Chitabi. I hope you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, there are a bunch of birds over here.
Hadley's getting distracted, so we're
gonna do that.
Call it a day, and we'll be back. We'll be back soon.
We'll do Bumbura next.
Yeah, Bumbura.
Or another
more,
Chitabi.
More of Chitabi.
Yeah, sorry, I lied. I wasn't paying attention.
You're very distracted.
Yep.
Okay, bye.